Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today, I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm very well, thanks, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited, Nick. I'm excited. We're in week 10, the double digit week.
Oh
and
my gosh.
We are getting so close to the end of the challenge. You can like feel it. You can feel the electricity in the air from this January challenge.
Can't believe it. It's just gone so quickly. Yet for some people, they probably don't feel that way. And they're probably going, what are you talking about? But for us, it flies by and we just love seeing everybody's results.
Oh yeah. And you know, we start to see those awesome transformations coming through on social medias, and it's just always just so inspiring. I love it. And I love all the positive, you know, views that we have on our transformation, not just very like external of, oh, look at me, I've got a six pack, very, lots of internal transformations of, wow, look how strong I've become. Look how confident I've become. Like, you know, I just feel really happy in my body. And there's just huge, powerful things that will take us beyond this 12 week journey and help us to continue on with this journey. Cause once we start to shift that focus from that external goals of like, oh, I want to get, you know, big arms or big booty or whatever it is, to more of those internal goals of, hey, I do this for me. I do this as a reward, not as a punishment. I do this because I want to feel good about my body, not to beat myself up. Like that's the whole point of exercise. That's the whole point of dieting. And that's the whole point of the challenge. And it's great to see that individuals are experiencing that.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, I always think the saying that you can't hate yourself into a body that you love is a really good way of thinking about it. You know, you've got to just look at every aspect and nurture every aspect of yourself and see how you can get better all the time and come at it with a positive mindset.
That's right. And look, week 10, week 11, week 12. So 3 weeks to go in the challenge. And, you know, this is time where we just need to stay on track with our plan, you know, not make any big drastic overhauls with what we're trying to do. We're trying to take a very structured approach to reach our goals. And the quickest way to not reach our goals is to just constantly change lots and lots of things. It's all about sticking with that process, committing to that process, making minor tweaks along the way. That's fine, but it's all about staying focused over these next 3 weeks. And then we do our completion process. And then it's time to rethink, well, what are we going to do after the challenge ends?
That's right. I love thinking a couple of steps ahead. So, reach out if you want to have an idea of what to do after as well, because that's how you keep going.
That's right. That's right. Well, it is those shifting goalposts, which we love to talk about. And sure, for some people that can be a bit disheartening, but for others, they, you know, that's really motivating, where, you know, maybe your goal is to lose weight at the start, and maybe your goal is to build some muscle, and maybe to improve your fitness. And then maybe you want to get flexible again and, you know, rinse and repeat over and over again, and then throw in a marathon. Why not? Right. So those goals can always change, and it's totally fine to change your goal from, you know, month to month or quarter to quarter or year to year. And that's totally fine.
Definitely. Just leave no stone unturned in your life, because before you know it, you'll be old.
You'll be old. Look at us getting into some philosophy. One day we're all going to die one day.
Just get it done. You know, get anything done that you want to. Everybody was laughing at me from the other week when I said, just chuck on some tan and go to the town hall. But it's true. Just get it done.
Just go and do it, and you'll probably find you'll enjoy it. And it was really funny, Nick. I had a conversation with a patient at the clinic who is wanting to compete, and he's timeline is that, oh, you know, maybe another year or two of training before I step on stage. And this guy is in good nick, you know. I'm like, man, like, go and watch one of the competitions. Just go sit there and watch, and you'll probably be surprised that you're in currently better condition than some of those that go and compete, right? And, you know, he was kind of making the claim that, oh, well, if I commit to something, like, I want to give it my best. And I get that. I understand. And if you're wanting to do a bodybuilding comp or a physique comp, or, you know, you want to give it your best effort, sure. Part of that is to build like a bit of experience. So, you know, go and watch a show, maybe go at a small meet or a small competition, like a local competition. And, you know, maybe just that experience is what's going to help you to bring that entire package. Because if you push it out to, you know, 2 years, like my patient in the clinic or more, you know, you might find that you missed out on just lots of good experience by just going and competing, and, you know, getting the joy of competing. And then the joy of competing pushes you to train harder and motivates you. And it's just a positive feedback loop. So the main point, go and do it. If you want to do it, just go and do it. Sign up, put on the red bikini, like Nick said, and then get a tan, go to the town hall and flex your biceps and just enjoy the whole process.
Exactly. It's not exclusive to anyone. You can do it.
That's right. That's right. Mm. Now, Nick, we have our awards night coming up soon. Ooh, we do love our awards night.
Chance to get dressed up.
Yes, it's so exciting. It's on Friday, the 6th of May. So 2 days away from Star Wars Day, May the 4th. So the 6th of May. So we'll be kicking off at 7:30 p.m. And that's live streamed to our Facebook social hub. So if you want to know the minute that everybody else knows, go check out that live stream, which will be on Friday, the 6th of May at 7:30 p.m. And if you aren't able to watch that, you can actually watch a repeat once the event is over, or you can just wait until you receive an email where we announce the top 10s or the top three, and our community award and the People's Choice Award and all the other bits and pieces that come together in the awards night. So make sure you come and join us on that night.
Absolutely. Can't wait. It's always a really good night. It's always a whole bunch of fun. And I love it when people find out what they got and they react, at the same time. It's awesome.
It's awesome. So good. Yeah. And yes, Nick, we're getting lots of questions about the M Challenge, which will be launching in May. So we're in April next month, May. Oh, gosh. So Nick and I are working behind the scenes in the project development and project management side of things to launch the brand new M Challenge app. So everything's going to be run on our app. So that's going to be on our mobile device. And for those of us who are not fans of mobile devices, there will be a web app as well, where you can just log in, similar to our format at the moment. So, of course, with that there is a chance of bugs to exist. That's sure, we understand that, but we hope to bring you the best quality app that we possibly can. That's only going to evolve and grow, just like the challenge. Now, we're constantly looking for ways to improve the challenge, and that's going to be exactly the same with the app. So I'm sure day one, day 10, and day 100 of the app will be very different milestones. So we hope that you join us in the next journey of the challenge as we move into the M Challenge.
That's right. And I mean, we'll always be here anyway. So that's your constant. We're here.
We're here. That's right. Yeah. Now, Nick, the last thing I want to talk about before we move on to our NSVs is kind of like the touching on the noise in the fitness industry, right? The one scroll through Instagram or TikTok or YouTube, there always is another trainer who is waving the flag of, something new, something flashy, something, maybe sexy or lucrative or some magic secret. But here at The Challenge, we are all about principles. It's principles that are supported by evidence, science, and principles that are supported by anecdotes. People like you who are doing the challenge, people who've done the challenge previously, we follow set principles. And part of that is to kind of simplify the process. We don't want to overcomplicate the strategy, right? The strategy ultimately is, a bit of portion control with nutrition, progressive overload with strength training, and then measuring our progress and see if it's working. We're not promoting really crazy dances or really extreme diets or anything like that. Principle-based approaches to our strategy on the challenge. And that's going to be reflected in our application, our app on our phone. It's also reflected in our current programs, where we are focusing primarily on strength training, focusing primarily on the foundational movements that are safe, no squats on a BOSU ball or some complicated resistance band, triple banded setup that takes you 5 minutes to get in and 5 minutes to get out. No, we're just simplifying, strength training and the nutrition. We're really hoping that you are looking at nutrition as foods that you might be eating now, chicken, we've got beef, we've got tofu or other plant-based proteins, we've got rice, we've got pasta, the really basic foods that are likely in your cupboard right now. So they're like our main kind of values in the challenge, principle-based, evidence-based, anecdotal-based approach to body transformations. And my advice to you is, if you are finishing the challenge and not planning to come and join us, that's cool, no dramas. Just have a critical eye when you start looking through the world of fitness, especially online, because there's a whole lot of in the nicest way bullshit online, where it can be misleading, it can be overcomplicating, super restrictive, and lots of kind of fear tactics about you are going to be in a bad place if you do X, Y, and Z, which is not ever the case.
That's so true. And yeah, I think you and I both share these key values, which they've led us to where we both are. We're both fairly strong. We've still got a lot more to go, in our strength training and everything else. But I think, you know, we can both attest to the fact that we do keep it simple within our own training and nutrition, and it works.
That's right. You know, this the simplified process, it works, and it's worked for lots of people, and it will continue to work for many people to come.
Yes.
Nick, let's move on to our NSVs, our hashtag NSVs, our non-scale victories, where we celebrate those wins that aren't related to the scales. Nick, who have you found this week?
All right. Hashtag NSV. Come on down, Emma Jordan. Emma, the ab queen. I don't know if you've seen Emma's abs, but they're looking pretty good. Anyway, Emma says, not technically a flex, rather multiple. So this is actually, I stole it from Flex Friday because it's still an NSV. This week has been big for me in terms of feeling stronger and noticing differences in my physique. This is why I love the 12-week challenge. It's tough, but for me, the last 4 weeks are so rewarding. Keep chugging, everybody, and I hope you're enjoying the process as much as I am. So that's very positive. And I love the fact that she's talking about noticing changes, differences in those last few weeks, because that's exactly what we were just talking about. So she's put it very well. Well done, Emma.
I love that. You know, feeling stronger and noticing differences in my physique, Emma. That's beautiful. Keep going, keep chugging along. And yeah, I hope you enjoy your abs and have an absolute great time with your abs.
Oh my gosh, you even got a special Coach Steve dad joke. So you are absolutely killing.
Absolutely. Look, Nick, I think you thought I wasn't able to fit a pun in there, but I was. So I made it.
You had the ability.
Ability.
Okay. All right. Well, let's dad, mum jokes, all the stuff. We're moving on because anyway, well done, Emma. Clap, clap, clap. Not a synthetic. What's that clap that you do? The drum roll.
The drum roll.
We're working on that. All right. So Hayley. Hello, Hayley. Hayley Thomas. So she came second place in our May challenge last year, 2021. So Hayley is a singer, and if you want to follow Hayley on Instagram as well, she has some really good food ideas. So her meals always look gorgeous. Very simple though, as per what we were saying, usually just some protein and some veggies. Anyway, that's not her NSV. It's been a hectic start to the challenge for me. Being on tour, it was hard to cook meals, so I just had to make the best choices from healthy available meals, e.g. tuna on rice cakes. You know, that's fantastic. I'd love that. It definitely hasn't been a perfect start, but I've kept my steps up. And since being home, really got stuck into the strength training at the gym, which I'm loving, feeling stronger than ever. And she's also showing that on Instagram as well at the moment. I need to get stricter with the diet to hopefully see the scales drop. So if you look at all this, she's actually really measuring everything. She's aware of what she needs to do. She's keeping it simple. She's actually been on tour. So this is a musician that's actually required on tour, probably with, quite a few things going on, and she's still managing to eat, in a sustainable, good way that is going to actually help fuel her for her performance. And then this is my favorite bit. She goes, I was just so happy to step on stage for my tour and feel confident in my skin. I have a little voice inside of me telling me to really step it up and maybe even work to bring on a bikini comp. So look at that. That's just what we were talking about as well. Right now that feels a long way away, and I'm not sure I have it in me, which I disagree with, but that's just my own editorial. But I'm letting the idea float around in my mind. So many things, just that keeping on track of the healthy eating, managing her actual career as well, getting stuck back into the strength training, setting a new goal. Where Coach Steve, this is crazy.
That's awesome. I love it. And if you want to check out Hayley's podcast that she did with Kushnik, really cool podcast, go check that one out. Yeah, you can hear all about her story, about how she was on tour and maybe made some, I wouldn't say poor choices, but, you know, changes in her lifestyle that maybe led to where she was, joined the challenge. And then now she's going to step up on stage, bikini competition. And we're going to see it, Hayley. We are no pressure. Now everybody knows that you're going to be stepping on stage and you are going to rock it.
I know. That's the thing. Like setting goals, NSV, goal setting, smart goals. Well done.
Love it.
Okay. Next one, Jess Freeman. So Jess says, I thought I was going to struggle a lot more in this challenge, but I've really been loving the structure with my diet and workouts and doing my best to enjoy the whole process so it doesn't feel like work. I still have the occasional moment where I don't want to weigh or track my food, but I remember why and my goal, and it helps to keep me on track. I can't wait to see what happens in the last 4 weeks and where I'll be at in 6 months from now. We're on the home stretch now. So I love all of these ones that I've spoken about, because see how they're celebrating what they're doing. I'm a big believer in constantly celebrating little milestones and things that you are doing. And then I love to also analyze where you can go better within what you're doing and then set a future goal. So that's sort of almost what I do nearly on the daily, you know, just to keep ticking over. So I love that structure for Jess, because she's celebrated, looked at something that she can improve upon, and then set a future goal. Mm-hmm.
Love that, Jess. That's awesome. Nick, I found a few this week. First one goes to Alyssa Seaton. And Alyssa writes, "This competition has helped me get back on track. I'm back into a routine at the gym and being mindful about my food intake again. So no, I'm not losing the kilos others have, but it's given me accountability and motivated me to turn up. If this is what I bring out of the comp, then thank you and bless you all. Still working hard." Love that, Alyssa. And, you know, similar to that idea about structure, similar to what Jess writes, where, you know, maybe it's not about losing the kilos that other people are losing. You know, the theft of joy is comparison, right? Yeah. So it's not always about what other people are losing. It's all about, you know, getting back on track, getting back into training, you know, making wise food choices and, you know, keeping motivated, keeping yourself accountable. And I love that, Alyssa.
Me too. Good on you, Alyssa.
The next one here, I saw it, and it was one of my favorite NSVs in a while here, Nick. This one goes out to Sarah Maguire, and she writes, "Feeling really good. Excited that we only have a little over 3 weeks to go. I've definitely felt stronger, now starting to see some changes appear. A positive note, I no longer fixate on the scales, but see them as a guide."
Oof.
It's nice to see the numbers finally drop, though. I love that. That's part one of what I love, where she's using the scales as, you know, data. It's a guide. You know, it's just information. We're trying to disconnect emotionally from that scales number and use it as a guide, going, am I actually making a change in my body? That's what they're there. And then my favorite part was the photo that she posted along with this, where she's posting photos of her calluses. And I love seeing calluses, because it shows that we are, you know, strength training. We're using probably barbells, and we're building some skin around our palm, because we're training. And I love that. So congratulations, Sarah, on your calluses, and congratulations on maybe that mindset shift of, or that number on the scales.
Beautiful. Yep. Calluses on their own. Just the photo is an NSV.
NSVs. Look, this is going to be a little mini challenge for those who listen to the podcast. Show us your calluses, I reckon.
Yeah,
this
please.
Week. It's going to be callus week. So either on Facebook or Instagram, or maybe in your journals, if you listen to the podcast, show us your calluses. If they're torn calluses and they're bleeding, all right, maybe not those calluses. If you've got soft, supple hands like myself, you know, you might not be able to see the calluses, but they're there. But yeah, show us your calluses. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd love to see them. Go on.
Look, and the last one here goes out to John Jones. And John writes, "Losing weight apart from scales have gone down almost 2 sizes in waist." Awesome. 2 sizes down in your waist. "Seeing strength improvements each workout. For example, week 1 to week 4, I did barbell back squats, maxed out at 80 kilos for 8 reps, 3 sets. Start of week 9, I was doing 90 kilos for 12 reps and 3 sets. Awesome. Love that, John. You're losing weight, and that's showing through dropping 2 sizes around your waist, and you're getting stronger. You're doing 10 kilos more in the back squats for more reps. So 4 more reps each set. So you're definitely increasing your total volume load, and hopefully you're utilizing some of the features on the training template where you can see some of those numbers go up. So congratulations to John.
Go, John. And of course, there's a part of me that has to calculate his 1 rep max now. You know, when you see that, you go, "Ooh, yeah, you'll be all right." Like probably about 107 nicely or something.
Yeah. Probably pushing the triple digits.
Something like that. Wow. Nice work. JJ John Jones.
Yep. JJ John Jones. If you're listening to this, you can check out the training template. There's a fitness and strength tracker on there, and you can input how many reps you did at what weight, and it will predict a 1 rep max for you. So if you are looking at numbers, it might be nice to see that this formula calculates that you could probably lift over 100 kilos, which is awesome.
I know. Yeah, it's awesome. I love that. My life is a one rep max.
So look, a big congratulations to everyone who posted for NSV this week. But if you're experiencing NSV, let us know. You can post about it on our Facebook social hub. You can post about it on Instagram. Just tag Max or Maxine Challenge, soon to be the M Challenge, but you know, eyes out for that one there. Or post about it on your journals on the challenge website. And Nick and I will search for you.
We do. And there's nothing too small, you know, just put it out there because chances are people will love to hear it.
That's right. Mm. Nick, let's move on to our coach's corner where we offer our tip for the week. Nick, what advice do you have for us?
My CC of this week is just a little bit on the best and worst fitness advice I've received. Now, don't forget that someone's best fitness advice could be someone else's worst. So this is just purely my a few things that have set me back or propelled me forward in my training life. So one thing that I, when I first learned how to deadlift, I was initially taught to squat the deadlift. So I'm sure Coach Steve, you'll have something to say about this, but being a tall human being as well, it was just such an awkward position to start with. And yeah, I didn't really, I had no idea. So that was pretty crappy. And I'm glad that I know that I don't have to do that because since then I've actually learned a little bit more, you know, in the last maybe 8 or 9 years about deadlifting. And I, like, we can always improve. And the thing that I learned recently about it, just watching a bit of Australian strength coach, Sebastian Oreb, he was talking about having really loose arms. And I'd never really thought about that before, but that's really interesting. And that's really helped me. That helped me get the 155, by the way. So anyway, squat the deadlift was a bad one. And also any type of low carbohydrate in terms of performance. Anytime anyone's ever told me to do that for a performance objective for a goal towards performance, it's never led to anything good. Like I can actually, when I was trying to do power bursts on the bike or when I was trying to do longer distance stuff or even just performance in the gym, I can actually feel myself running out of energy. So low carb didn't work for that for me. No good. So that was my two worst things. And I'm glad that I don't do either of those anymore. I feel like I'm a better human being because of those two things. And then the best was, which it's taken me a long time. And I don't even know if you would say that I'm definitely great at this still, but concentrate on one thing at a time. And don't try and do a million things at once in terms of fitness. So I'm just starting to learn this even now, even over the past couple of weeks, I've cut down my steps a little bit because I was doing probably a little bit too many. And I've actually, my body composition's gotten a little bit better as well because I've rested a little bit more. I prioritize sleep. So those things are really important when you're training fairly hard. You know, you can't really get away with, you can't out train poor, shitty recovery and sleep. So I do think sometimes this whole idea of recovery can be a bit overplayed, but there's a happy medium. So they're my two things.
I like it. If you were watching the video of this, you probably just see my face like scrunch up when you say squat the deadlift.
I know. Can you please tell me all about it? I know, terrible.
I get the idea of like, you know, leg drive, you know, any of the Louis Simmons fans out there, leg drive, yeah. You know, you've got to push. So the deadlift isn't purely a pull motion. You do have to push. And often the hip hinge is a difficult position for people to get into. You know, we often lose our ability to flex at our hip, and I see that a lot in the clinic. So people go to bend over and they can't you know, bring their thigh closer to their belly button. They don't have that ability. So when they go to deadlift, they can't like go into that hip hinge position. If you have no idea what I'm talking about with a hip hinge, you know, Google it. Basically, you know, it's that idea where your shins stay somewhat vertical and your hips kind of move backwards and your kind of midsection stays in the same posture. So I'm not saying it needs to be neutral or anything like that. It just stays in the same posture as you move through the hips, and the hips, you know, move back. So it's just like how you may, I don't know, close your car door with your butt, right? You do one of those. That's kind of like a hip hinge. So, you know, we do need to get into that hip hinge, and the deadlift isn't completely a pull motion. You do need to push, but a big challenge that people do or a thing that people often get incorrect with the deadlift is they go into a squat position. So they lower themselves a little bit too much. Their thigh bone almost goes like parallel with the ground. The hips are too low. And then when they go to stand up, the bar hits them in the shins or hits them in the knee. And then the bar ends up moving around and things like that. So don't squat the deadlift. It's not called a squat. Yeah. Sorry, I just remembered one more thing. I remember going to like a rehab class at uni, and the guy taking the class, he was calling the deadlift a hip dominant squat. And I was like, it's a different movement, man. I don't know what you're talking about. So anyway, so the squat is not a deadlift. Two different movements, hip hinge and a squat, two different patterns. Don't squat the deadlift.
Yeah, it was a killer because it would automatically, when I was trying to do it, it would take 20 kilos off what I could do. I was like, what is wrong with me? But yeah, it was just so interesting. Sometimes if you think something isn't quite right, you do need to follow it up. It doesn't matter who's telling you, because if you're feeling in your gut that it's not quite right, you need to suss it out, I reckon.
I think of one situation where you could squat a deadlift.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Trap bar deadlift.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You're either trap bar deadlift, or I guess if you don't have a trap bar, you can do the same thing with dumbbells by the side.
Yeah.
You can have your torso more upright and you can do a squat. So technically it's called a trap bar deadlift because you're lifting off the ground, but it's a squat pattern. So it's the only comma but in there. If you're doing a barbell deadlift of any variety, RDL, stiff legged, deficit, whatever deadlift it is, it's a deadlift, it's not a squat.
Correct. 100%. I agree with you. So yeah.
Have to find the caveat there. You got to find one reason why that might maybe work.
I knew that that you would be able to contribute to this. Yeah, because it just set me back for so long.
Oh yeah.
Now I'm not set back anymore.
No. Yeah, onwards and upwards.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right, Nick. I want to talk a little bit about rest between sets. Okay. Rest between sets. Okay. So I think in the good old days of aerobics in the 70s, 80s, 90s, there was a push to do more and more and more and have less rest. Okay. And that idea was that, the less rest that we have, the more exercise we can do. You can really concentrate that exercise. You can do a lot of exercise in, 5 minutes, which is awesome. You get sweaty, you get your heart rate going, you feel like you had a good workout, which is great, awesome. So for certain goals, having a good workout or getting getting sweaty or challenging your cardiovascular system can be suitable for certain goals, especially if your goal is to improve your overall fitness and to an extent your overall health. So if you're just training for health and fitness, great, perfect. Aerobic style, short rest, perfect. However, if our goal is more in line with muscle building, our goal is more in line with strength training, shorter rests can be very limiting, okay? And primarily with body composition, our main goal in the strategy, especially within the challenge, is to try to build or maintain as much muscle as we can as we either try to build muscle, a calorie surplus, or lose body fat, a calorie deficit. So our main goal primarily in the challenge is to build muscle. That's the main goal here. So having short rest periods can be limiting and is not a primary way that we would progress training. Okay. So if you have shorter rest, you just simply haven't, recovered back to close to 100%. So you'll never get back to 100%. That might take you a whole day to kind of get back to 100%. But, we want to be in a position where we get back to maybe, at least 90, 95% recovered before we do our next bout of activity. Because, we want to give that set our maximal effort so that we can stimulate muscle. For example, if you've got, let's say, dumbbells, you're doing bicep curls. Set number one, you do 10 reps at 10 kilos on a bicep curl. You only rest for, let's say something silly like, 10 seconds, and you do another set, you might only be able to do 2 reps. Like, okay, can you count that you've done 2 sets, one set you did 10 reps and one set you did 2 reps? No, that's not viable. What some individuals will do is instead of doing 10 reps at 10 kilos. They might grab the 5 kilo dumbbells and go, oh, well, I'm going to do 10 sets, 10 reps, and then I'm going to wait 10 seconds and I'm going to do another set at 5 kilos. So what ends up happening is they underload, they use less load. And in the other sense, they shorten their rest period. So chronically over time, they're just using less weight, stimulating less muscle to grow. And then they might be scratching their head after 6 months, wondering, why aren't I building muscle? They may be improving their fitness. Awesome, if that's your goal. But if your goal is weight loss, if your goal is body transformation, if your goal is building muscle, getting stronger, that's not a wise way to approach that strategy. Okay, so less rest can be very limiting and is a way of pseudo progression. Okay, pseudo progression, meaning that you may be thinking that you're progressing, but it's limiting your actual progress. Okay. Again, goal specific. That's the main takeaway. Now, there is the other side of the coin where too much rest can be limiting, right? Where if we are having rests of like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, like what power lifter bros would do, they would literally bring out a camping chair and sit there and wait for their body to recover in between sets. Okay, that could be limiting as well. You know, we could start to cool down. You know, our blood flow might, you know, return back to normal. We're not in that heightened state of arousal. You know, we could kind of like just get comfortable, sleepy, you know, scrolling through Instagram, whatever it is. And that may not be suitable as well. And again, you know, you kind of blow out your training time, you know, being in the gym for 3 hours, which might not be helpful for a lot of people. And then, you know, you may lose that ability to record each set as you go. So what I mean is that if you do set number one, you do 10 reps of 10 kilos, your bicep curl, you wait, let's say, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then you do another 10 reps at 10 kilos. Great. Awesome. Good job. And then you go to do a third set, but you may start talking to Sally at the gym and, you know, 10 minutes later, you're chatting with her and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to go back to my biceps. You go do another set of bicep curls and you now do, let's say 12 repetitions at 10 kilos. And you're like, well, what happened? How did I do 10, 10, and then 12 after this massive rest? Then your next workout, you may re-enter the gym with an expectation that you're going to do 10, 10, and 12. But this time Sally isn't there. So now what happens is you do 10, 10, and then 6. Because you didn't have that long rest. Okay. So now you face a problem where you can't really compare those two workouts in terms of its overall intensity. And it might be difficult to then see future progress. Okay. So there's some challenges that we might face with rest times if they're too short, too long. So now we might be wondering, well, what do we do? How long do we rest for? Well, the rough guide I'd recommend is anywhere between 1 and 3 minutes. Okay. 1 minute allows for some sort of cardiovascular recovery, some replenishment of ATP for my science bros out there. And then some sort of like, you know, maybe mental reset in between sets and then allowing those synergist muscles to reset. Synergist muscles, meaning those muscles that work alongside with the primary muscle. So when you're doing, squats, as an example, a barbell back squat, sure, the quadriceps are working, but synergist muscles would be like our core muscles and our back muscles to kind of support that barbell as we squat. So we want to allow some of those synergist muscles to recover as well. So 1 to 3 minutes, a quick little checklist to go through is one, are you cardiovascularly ready? So are you, you know, did you catch your breath? Is your heart like calm down? Everything's relaxed cardiovascularly. Are you ready? Muscle wise, you know, is the target muscle and the synergist muscles ready? So, you know, if you're training your quads, are they ready? Are the synergist muscles like your back and your glutes, are they ready? And then number three would be your like mental mindset. You know, are you mentally hungry? Have you got the fire back in your belly where you're like, yep, I'm going to do another set of squats? Because I think we've all been there where, you know, you might be ready. Like, you know, you've caught your breath, your heart's calmed down, your muscles are ready to go, but you're staring at that barbell and you're like, nah, man, no more, please no more. So it might take a little bit longer, maybe another minute for that mentality to be like, all right, I'm ready to go. I'm going to do this. So that's a little bit of an overview about rest times. Be cautious if you're trying to speed things up. If you do find that you need less than a minute rest, maybe it's worth reflecting on your overall intensity, because if I do a difficult set of a relative intensity, you know, maybe like an 8, 9, 10 out of 10 effort, I'm pretty tired after that. I don't know about you. I'm not a superhuman. And that's the goal of it, is that we want to be, you know, some relative level of fatigue after our set, so that we do need to rest for a minute. If you find that you are scrolling through Instagram, you've got your camping chair out, you're talking to Sally at the gym, you know, maybe we are in that zone of, you know, taking the piss a little bit, and you might need to kind of get back into work, get back into some work, so that you can, you know, keep that training session within a relative time frame, and that you are able to repeat your sessions, that you can progress, so that this isn't another variable that kind of screws up your progression or sense of progression. So rest times, Nick, keep an eye on them.
Yeah, very good, very good. I think you really start to value your rest when you're working pretty hard. You actually, you flip it around and you go, oh gosh, how much can I squeeze out of this before I have to do it again?
That's right. That's right. And look, sometimes, you know, that gym environment, or even the home gym environment, can throw curveballs. Like, there's times when I'm, you know, halfway through my session and my partner's calling out to me from the garage saying that, you know, the baby George is having a moment and the dog's crazy. Okay, I need to go back inside. And, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm like, all right, I got to get back to my workout. Sure, things like that happen. You're at a gym and you see your best friend, you haven't seen them in a while, you're going to chat with them. Sure, like, things happen. So it's fine. It's not a horrible thing. But it's just an extra variable to consider, especially if you want to be go aerobic style, that might be limiting to your overall strategy.
Brilliant. Love it.
Nick, let's move on to some questions
for
this week. The first question here, and you can probably answer this one, is I see lots of different ab exercises online. Do I really need to do all of them? Which ones are the best ones for a six pack? Nick, what advice do you have for this person?
Well, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it was these two women that were talking about how before, when they were a little bit dishonest on Instagram, they would get to the point where they'd compete in the WBFF. They're both WBFF pros, and they would do their hanging leg raises and things like that only when they were shredded, and put it up on Instagram. So people would think that that's how they got the abs. They've since, you know, decided that that's not. I think there's a bit of a push now to be a bit more real on these platforms. So, you know, that's not necessarily the way that they got their abs, because you do have to have a reasonably low percentage of body fat in front of the abs to actually, it needs to go away so you can actually see what's under there. Of course, as we know, abs are a muscle. They're muscles, so you can make them bigger. You can make them stand out. As we always talk about, in terms of quote-unquote core training, we know, and you even said before about how, you know, the muscles that work in synergy, say in a squat, you know, that they're things, they're our core muscles, so they're going to be working anyway. So you don't have to worry about that. But just in terms of actual ab exercises, if you wanted to incorporate them, just say that you've got your diet nailed, you are aware that core is core. It's a different thing. It's actually working in every single, just to even for me to sit up and talk to you, I'm using my muscles. I might sit up a little bit taller now so I can but so anything that where you are crunching, I mean, I don't really have anything specific. If I'm going to do some ab exercises, something quote unquote that's an ab thing, I might incorporate a few different things at the end of a session. I'm not a huge person to do a lot of things like that. I might do it towards the end of say a prep, a bit like those people, but I like just your basic just crunches and things, but I don't think that they actually necessarily I don't think they give you the abs that you think that you get. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I like that answer. What my question to you is, in your current training, do you do any direct abdominal exercises at work?
Only on Saturday I started.
Yeah, okay.
now that we mention it, like I'll actually have a look at what I do, because I only did it once and I've now forgotten, but my abs are a bit sore from it. But look, don't forget that you have to be fairly lean already, you know. You have to, it's not going to necessarily give you the abs, but so So a knee pull in and a rope crunch. That's the one that I really, really like. But you've got to be able to do it really well. So if you're pulling down, you don't go down as far as what you think. So a lot of these movements, say like even a core movement, which I will do little crunches, but I won't come up all the way. I don't use momentum. So you've got to really not swing too much with those. So just really concentrate on keeping your back into the floor. I mean, that's a bit more technique stuff. So I will do a crunch. I will do oblique. I do work a little bit of that, but I personally I don't really want to grow my obliques too much more because I do a lot of, you know, the deadlifts and things like that. Everything else, it's all taken care of. So just a couple of crunches here and there. I do like the hanging ones because I also like to then, personally, I like to be able to think that I'm holding my body weight up and I'm a beast.
Yeah.
You know, those ones where you pretend that you're walking.
Yeah, the chin up ladder thing. Yeah.
But I don't do them to grow anything. But yeah, no. I'm just going to do it now because in the division that I want to compete in, I do need, you can see my abs, but I want them to be like a turtle, as people say in the challenge.
I love it. Yeah. I think in my time of being both a Pilates instructor in my time before the challenge and as a clinician in the clinic, I see lots of individuals when they go to do like an ab crunch movement, they don't do an ab crunch. And what I mean is that an ab crunch to train those ab muscles, specifically that rectus abdominis, that six pack muscle, like you need to go through spinal flexion. Okay. Spinal flexion where the spine actually like bends forward. Okay. So that's not a dangerous position. Don't stress about that. You need to go through that to contract the abs. But what I find individuals doing is either one, they do lots of hip flexion. Yeah. So if you see people do like leg raises, you'll see that their back, and when they're lying down, if anything, it's in extension. So they're arching their back while they're doing leg raises. So great. Their hips are getting a great workout. Their quadriceps are getting a great workout through the rectus femoris, the quad muscle. But their abs, they're just there kind of stabilizing. They're not actually going through a contraction. That's the first problem we see. Second would be similar to that idea of aerobics or maybe rest times I mentioned earlier, where they want to do an ab circuit for some reason, where the abs, we need to train them differently to how we train our biceps. It's the same muscle. So they may go through using momentum, like you said, Nick, or do five different ab exercises in a row as fast as they can for some reason, and they're not actually contracting their abs again. And I think you can get a really great abdominal stimulation if you do kind of slow it down, take away the momentum and really think about spinal flexion. And you could, I guarantee most of us, if you kind of took away all those fancy exercises and just did the really classic ab crunch, really slow, had a nice breath out and really pushing that lower back into the ground as you lift that chest up and really think about spinal flexion, you would get a crazy abdominal, like almost cramp. And that's when the abs are contracting. The big but there, Nick, like you said, is that the abs are working a lot through those big movements like, squats, deadlifts, overhead presses. Me personally, I don't train abs at all. I get most of my abdominal or midsection training just through my heavy lifting. At the moment, I'm doing a little bit of spinal flexion training because I've got a bit of a sore back and I've lost a little bit of my spinal flexion. So that's where my kind of maybe ab training comes from. I've got a different focus with that. So ab training, I think many of us get it wrong and many of us, it's not even needed. I'd say maybe like the advanced bros and sisters out there, maybe for them, ab work is necessary. Maybe like Emma, who was ANSV, or maybe like you, Coach Nick, where you're in that more advanced area, you might need some abdominal specific training to continue to see ab growth. But for many of us who are that beginner intermediate, you need absolutely no direct ab work to see abdominal growth. And like you said, as you lose body fat, that six pack will pop and happy days. We've got our goal without doing any crunches or crazy circuits or any of those weird and wacky exercises.
Yeah, agreed. And the other thing I've got to say is if you are doing something like a crunch or a leg raise and you feel your hip flexors, that's when you know that something bad, like it's not working.
No.
You know, they shouldn't feel tired. So a good one is, I was just watching our database videos not that long ago, and I cannot remember what you called it, but I think it's something like a frog.
Frogger crunch, yeah.
Yeah, frogger crunch. That's a good one if you look it up, because that takes the hip flexors out of it. So that's probably quite a good one to start with, because not many people can do a good frogger
crunch,
because you are seriously taking those hip flexors. You're taking any of that out.
Yeah, I think I stole that from a CrossFit wad.
Yeah, I think I did. You like
I'm not creative with my exercises, but I definitely get a lot of influences online. I think for me, one exercise I would recommend most people to try is a resistance band loaded cat cow. Okay, most of us know that cat cow, or some people call it cat camel. You know, you're on your hands and knees and you kind of arch your back into like a rounded shape and then the other shape. Mm-hmm. If you grab the resistance band, throw it over your back and then just loop it around your hands, kind of like how people would do like a resistance band loaded push-up where they've got like the band around their hands, around their back. If you place that resistance band over like your low back, right? So picture it with me. So you've got the band around your hands, looped around your low back and then around the other hand. And then what you can do is as you move through that cat cow position, you've got some external feedback and you can actually really feel if your back is moving into flexion, right? And you get this really crazy abdominal crunch, right? Because you're in that cow position. So for me, in my like bit of back pain, little rehab to kind of get my lower back flexion back, that's my rehab that I'm doing at the moment for me. And you know, crazy abdominal contraction. So if you're not sure if you're even going into spinal flexion, give that a try. Resistance band loaded cat cow is what I would call it, or cat camel. And yeah, it's a real good one.
I bet I'm just going to put you on the spot here so you can cut it out if you have to. But what do you think of vacuums?
Yeah, vacuums are really cool for abdominal control. Yeah, so the vacuum, very advanced exercise. And often we need low body fat percentages to even kind of visualize what we're doing. Really popular in like the quote golden era of bodybuilding, you know, like the Arnold days where the vacuum was really prominent. And then now we have much bigger bodybuilders because of the products other than creatine that people are taking. And many
more than a burn bar.
More than a burn bar. Yeah. So they're just a little bit of a soup going on inside of them.
Yeah.
And often that leads to distended midsections and loss of abdominal control. So many guys who are in the pro bodybuilding world can't do that vacuum pattern. Some of the classic physique guys, like, you know, Chris Bumstead and stuff, can. So that what that movement is kind of contracting that transverse abdominis muscle. So that really deep layer of our core, sucking it in, and can transfer over to improve our overall core control. That can be really good if you want to flex your abs harder. Yeah. And it can be really good for those of us in the strength world. If you have like no core control, some improvement in core control could maybe improve your strength output, because that's kind of where our engine is in that midsection. So give it a try. Have you tried it before, Nick?
I just remembered that that's something else that I'm working on. Yes. And I think also there's some sort of connection as well with pelvic floor as well. So like if you've had children, I think it's a good one to do as well.
It is. Anatomy wise, the transverse abdominis is like that belt around the midsection. And then the top of the transverse abdominis actually links into the diaphragm and the bottom for the thoracic diaphragm specifically. And then the bottom links in with the pelvic diaphragm and makes a nice circle. And that's what we call the abdominal like cavity, right? You're completely right. So if you want to try the vacuum, the probably easiest way to start is in like a bit of a bent over supported position. So if you're at like a bench or a table, I used to do them in my bathroom. So before I'd have a shower, I would just stand there and I'd like, you know, lean over slightly, either on your hands or your elbows on like the bench or the table, whatever it is. And as you're in that bent over position, you know, you might be able to really suck in and think about like sucking everything in under the rib cage. And that's the goal there. And you might only be able to hold it for a few seconds at the start. Then you slowly build up that similar to like a plank, you really hold in and suck. And you know, you might be able to hold it for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds. And really great exercise, really classic exercise in that golden era of bodybuilding. And if you might find that if you can't do it and then can do it, you see some improvements in your performance just from that.
I recommend, because like when you're on stage, so when you all put on your tan and go to the town hall, you do need good abdominal control, because you can't really kind of suck everything in, and also like your rib cage pops out if you do that. But then also like you can't just go like that. You're kind of on stage all
the time.
So yeah, things like that are really good, but also just for life, you know, it can really make you look good as well as really improve your performance and everything. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, next question here. Advice with pre-workouts. I train in the morning and taking pre-workout makes me feel so gross. I feel fine once I go home and eat, but at 4:30 a.m. it's a bit early for food. I don't have a problem if I train in the arvo, but training then isn't convenient for me. All right, so advice on pre-workout. So it sounds like this individual previously took pre-workout in the morning, maybe at like 4:30 in the morning. And they're also suggesting that it was a bit early for food. So I'm going to assume that this person took pre-workout on an empty stomach and that made them feel gross. And I would say that it'll probably make me feel gross too if I had pre-workout on an empty stomach as well. Now, pre-workout is a quite highly potent product, and that's across the Maximaxine range and then also the supplement industry, where pre-workouts are often first really high in caffeine. Really high doses of caffeine on an empty stomach can cause some nausea, irritability, and some uneasiness. So that's the first thing I would say. So if you're on an empty stomach having pre-workout, that could hurt the stomach a little bit, cause a bit of gastric distress, make you feel a bit uncomfortable. Other products within pre-workouts, again, can be highly potent and cause like, I wouldn't say side effects, but other symptoms. So such as, let's say, citrulline malate. Consuming that it's a vasodilator, so it dilates your blood vessels, and that can increase, you know, the blood flow, oxygen, and make you feel a little bit lightheaded and such. So that can be a cause of it. Other pre-workouts have, because some of the products are really strong and have very strong bitter taste to it. So if you had a spoonful of creatine, you'd know about it. Like it'd just be yuck in your mouth, just straight up. Often pre-workouts are really highly flavored, and which is why you get those. Some people love it. Like I love a taste of pre-workout. I think it's just a nice taste, but that's by design. So it's a really sweet, strong taste to mask the bitterness of some of these compounds. Some individuals find that the additives that make those tastes cause a little bit of gastric distress, especially on an empty stomach. So maybe for yourself, again, that might be the cause of this, you know, uneasy feeling. And then finally, I want to touch on those folks out there who like to dry scoop pre-workout. Oh. Nick, have you heard of that? Dry scoop pre-workout? Yeah. So again, pre-workout is a really potent product. It's got lots of compounds in there, and it's designed to be mixed with, you know, a fluid and reach a certain concentration level. So if you completely take away all that fluid and then just dry scoop that, that product is now directly mixing in with your stomach acid, and that's how it's being diluted. So it's really heavily concentrated. It's like, let's say a cordial, right? You know, everyone's probably experienced cordial when they were a kid. You know, it's really concentrated. If you have just a shot of cordial, you'll know about it. But if you dilute it in some water, it's, you know, just like a sweet drink. I'm not saying that you need to go drink cordial, but that's the idea. Same with a pre-workout. If you just dry scoop that, not a wise idea. But this individual, maybe you mixed pre-workout in like a cup of water. Some individuals I know, even on this podcast, who would mix a pre-workout in a cup. But for some of us, having that really concentrated formula, drinking that might upset the stomach. So the main takeaway for this individual is you may need to either eat something with a pre-workout so that, you know, your body can digest that well and doesn't cause gastric distress. I understand that 4:30 might be too early for you to eat something. You may find that something as simple as like a banana, once you get up, fruit is often easy to digest. It has a little bit of water in it, or fluid in it, so some sort of hydration in that element of a banana, and then mixing that in with like a pre-workout. So maybe this is how it might logistically work. You wake up, eat your banana, get ready for the gym, put your clothes on, whatever. And as you're driving to the gym or walking to your garage or whatever you're training, you could be sipping your pre-workout and get ready to go. Or you might just be on the straight up coffee train, which is nothing wrong with that, but a straight up black coffee can be totally acceptable as well as a pre-workout. That's my advice.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I think you build up a tolerance, as you know, as you said, with the cup. I do have the cup
at work. Not to single you out.
No. When we're at work, because like if I want to have some of, say, the blue beta pump or whatever's in the lunchroom, there's only a cup. I don't take my drink bottle with me all the time. And, you know, I need to stay awake all afternoon sitting next to you.
Am I putting you to sleep, Nick?
No. Oh, how could Coach Steve ever? It's the opposite. If I'm asleep, you are waking me up.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. All right, Nick, next question here, COVID-related question. I would love some suggestions on how I can get back into exercise after COVID. Yeah. I had COVID a few weeks ago. Since then, I've been unable to exercise. A gentle 15-minute walk is painful for my lungs and takes an hour to recover from. Can anyone suggest what type of exercises I might be able to do? I don't want to lose any more strength by sitting on the couch for a couple of weeks, but also know that my program will be impossible for me at this stage. Nick, what advice would you have with this individual who is had COVID? Or I guess this is similar to anybody who might just be feeling unwell, the flu, sickness, or anything like that. How do we get back into training?
Well, firstly, the thing is you really have to take time to recover. Because like if somebody's saying to me, a gentle 15-minute walk is painful and takes time to recover from, that's where I'd be starting. I'd be trying to just improve upon that 15-minute walk. I'd make it 20 minutes, then I'd make it 30 minutes until it's kind of a little bit more doable. It'd be very difficult for me to advise somebody to go and do a strength session when walking isn't totally doable. It just shows me that the body, even though the mind might be wanting to lift those weights and it might be feeling like it's behind in the program, especially when you see the Facebook group and everybody's doing all their victories and things like that, you feel a bit left out, but you have to listen to your body. So, you know, my household's been a bit struck down with COVID and things. And luckily I was pretty able to maintain my training because I'm me, but other people in the house are still taking time, you know, and taking time to recover and do things that they need to do before they get back into the gym, you know. So I really wouldn't think of it in terms of losing strength. I'd actually just think of what can sort of flip it on its head and go, what can I do to regain a little bit of strength every day? So I'd be just improving upon the walking. I'd be looking at resting as much as you can. And then eventually you will get a spurt of energy and you'll go, okay, it's time to get back onto it. That's what I would say. It'd be ridiculous if I said, go out and do your session right now. I can't say that. So I have to say, look after yourself.
Yeah. You know, I agree. One strategy to try, you know, if that 15-minute walk is too much, you know, break it up into, let's say, like 3 5-minute walks, right? So 15 minutes is too much. Maybe 3 5 minutes is okay. And then maybe you could do like 4 5 minutes, because 15 minutes is too much. But if you did like 4 5 minutes, that's 20 minutes. So, you know, it's all about like maybe having exercise snacks rather than an exercise meal, right? You know, like small bouts of it. So there are strategies you could try, but you know, like we said, Nick, you know, you're unwell, you've suffered from this illness, and let it be COVID, let it be the flu, whatever it is. And you know, you need to allow your body to recover, because you can't jump into your normal session if a 15-minute walk is too much.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And just don't get too sucked in by social media as well, because you know, people are always posting what's going on that's good, but you know, everybody has their setbacks, so it's okay. You know, you just switch that off, read a book, have a bath, look after yourself, and it will come back.
Yep. Yep. Last question here. Similar question, slightly different. I was going very well in the first 4 weeks, but then I got shingles. Ooh, that's a painful one, which knocked me around for a bit. And sadly, I was unable to train for the last 4 weeks due to the pain. Finally feeling better and really want to continue on, but wondering if I should start from weeks 5 to 9 to get the most out of the program. Okay. So slightly different question where they're asking about, you know, where do we start again? You know, should we start from the beginning? Should we start in the middle or just kind of continue on with the program? And in most cases, we could just, you know, pick up where we left off in most cases where our programs are designed in kind of meso cycles. So weeks 1 to 4 is very, very similar to weeks 5 to 8, which is very similar to weeks 9 to 12. It's a meso cycle. So you may find that, you know, starting week 5 to 9 is, or 5 to 8 is fine, or weeks 9 to 12 is fine. We're not progressing through our meso cycles like that. Now, the other side of things would be like, okay, what weight do we use? So if you were normally doing, let's say, you know, 10 reps at 100 kilos on a deadlift, you've had some time off because you've been unwell, you've got shingles, maybe COVID. Where do we start? Do we start at 100 kilos where we left off? In most cases, wouldn't be wise to, you know, you may need to reduce the load to kind of build yourself back up, especially if we are on like a linear progression program where maybe you have a program set out with all your weights ready. So, you know, week 1, you're doing 100 kilos, week 2, you're doing 105, and week 3, you're doing 110. There's no point in having doing week 1, getting sick and unwell, then jumping straight onto week 2 where you're heavier than week 1. So you might need to start again. So I think it's very context specific, but in most cases within the challenge, you would not need to, you know, start at weeks 5 to 8 if you've missed week 5 to 8 to theoretically get the most out of the program. Okay. So I say that again. If you've missed weeks 5 to 8, you don't need to redo weeks 5 to 8 to kind of get the most out of the program, because it's, I wouldn't say it's super essential. You know, we have created a program that isn't a magic formula. It's principle based. So it's, if you miss out a few things here and there, it's not like you've completely screwed up the code or the formula or the spell or, you know, any magic thing that's happening. We just kind of missed out on a section of that structure, and then we just kind of jump back on. So you could do weeks 9 to 12 and just scale the load appropriately within to your current ability and then keep building from there. So that would be my advice to anyone who's got you know, shingles or an injury or an illness when we start to reintroduce training into our daily regime.
Agreed. Perfect.
Nick, let's wrap up there for episode number 59 of the Challenge Weekly Show. Almost at 60. We're almost at retirement age, Nick, but we are not retiring this podcast. We're going all the way to 100 and beyond, I reckon.
We are. Oh, easily. So look out.
So if you like this podcast, you can go check out our 58 other episodes, and we'll catch you next week for episode number 60. 60. Woo.
Woo. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.